From KUAZ News in Tucson, I'm Mark McLebore, and this is Arizona Spotlight. I'm hosting the show while Julie Bierock is away. On today's edition, Christopher Conover has a report on campaign finance reform and the effect of the clean election laws in our state. Peter Michaels has a conversation with Ron Shoopman of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council about the upcoming Tucson Town Hall meeting scheduled for May. Steve Hahn will speak with retired UA music professor Nicholas Zumbro to shed some light on a recent scandal in the world of classical music. And Robert Rappaport will introduce us to a national hero right here in Tucson. That's all coming up next on Arizona Spotlight. One thing that the Arizona House of Representatives has unanimously passed was a bill raising the amount of money that candidates can receive under the Clean Elections Law. Some critics say that the old system was too restrictive and unfair to a candidate who chose not to use public dollars in their campaign. Now, Christopher Conover has more on election finance reform in our state.
Campaigns are getting more expensive, and the legislature says it's time to change Arizona's clean election laws, limiting the amount of money candidates who agree to abide by the law's provisions can raise. Tucson State Representative Marion McClure was a co-sponsor of the bill and says the current limits just aren't enough.
First of all, $12,000 in a district like mine is not enough to really get your message out. In my district, in the primary, I had to send to 18,000 voters pieces of information. If you do the simple math, that takes $10,000 right there. And if you try to do anything else other than one mailing, and that you still have to buy your petitions, you have to pay to get them printed, and it just is very costly.
The idea behind the voter-approved law in 1998 was to take the influence of money out of political races. But Representative McClure, who does not run as a clean elections candidate, says just because a law is on the books doesn't mean it makes people more honest.
The idea at one time was that with taxpayer money, elections would be more fair. When we're saying that you can only raise from an individual $320, if I can be bought for $320, don't send me up here. I mean, quite frankly, I don't think any amount of money would ever make me vote for anything.
When the bill was first proposed this year, it received bipartisan support, which eventually grew to a unanimous vote in the House. Tucson State Representative Linda Lopez, who does not run as a clean elections candidate, says she was not surprised by the bipartisan support.
I believe that that's because there are many of us who are concerned about clean elections. We feel like there needs to be some changes made to bring it more up to date.
The bill is now in the Senate, and while Senate President Tim Bee admits he's not that familiar with the exact provisions of the House proposal, plenty of people in his chamber are interested.
Many members feel that there is a need to clean up clean elections, there's been many problems encountered with that taxpayer-funded elections program, and I know that a lot of people would like to see some improvements made, or some would advocate for its complete elimination.
Should the Senate pass the bill, next it will go to Governor Janet Napolitano, who says while she won't comment directly on the proposal, she'd like to see some changes in clean elections.
I've run twice as a clean elections candidate. I do think there's some things on the implementation side that should be simplified for candidates. You end up spending an awful lot of time with lawyers and accountants making sure that your books are right and every little detail is worked out. And my perception of the commission this year was they were changing an awful lot of rules in the middle of the game, and were not clear at the outset, you know, what they wanted candidates to do. So it was frustrating from a, you know, a desiring to comply status.
Campaign finance changes can be politically tricky because many in the public feel that enough money already is spent on campaigns. But Representative Lopez says she's not worried about a backlash or a perception that the changes are some sort of a raise for politicians.
You know, it's not a raise for me. I mean, you know, I am a non-participating candidate, which means I use traditional funding, but it certainly doesn't benefit me personally in any way. It benefits my ability to campaign. I think there will be some people out there who are concerned about, you know, we're tinkering with clean elections, and is this what the public wanted when they voted for clean elections? Maybe it's time to take a new look at clean elections and bring it up to speed, bring it up to date. It's been a while now since it's been passed.
Since the campaign finance bill changes a voter-approved statute, three-quarters of the Senate must approve before the bill heads to the governor for her consideration. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Christopher Conover.
Stay tuned. This is Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. Last week, the Southern Arizona Leadership Council announced that a Tucson regional town hall will take place in May at Los Ventana Canyon. The concept follows the success of the Regional Transportation Plan, the Regional Economic Development Organization, and the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan. The idea is being promoted by Southern Arizona Leadership Council President Ron Shoopman, who sat down with Peter Michaels for this interview.
Ron, thanks for coming in. Last week you announced that a regional town hall will take place this May, the weekend of the 5th and 6th. Why a town hall now, and why a regional town hall?
What we have seen over the last couple of years, Peter, is this region coming together to pass some critical initiatives, things that has given the community, I think, some energy about what we can do if we work together. TRIO, the development of TRIO, the passage of the RTA, and the passage of JTED are examples where this region worked together for the future of what we would like to see our community be in 5, 10, or 20 years. We wanted to find a vehicle where we could get a diverse group of voices together to talk about what we want for our future. We have asked the Arizona Town Hall, an organization that's been in place for 45 years in Arizona, to come down and run a Tucson Regional Town Hall for us. They have an excellent process that allows everyone to speak their honest opinion, and they capture the consensus of the group. So May 6th through 9th at Ventana Canyon, we will have 150 participants from across the region, from Marana down to Green Valley, and including Tucson, Oro Valley, and Marana. We have all of those people to participate in this and express their opinions so that we can take action after the town hall to maybe have some more successes in our future.
Tell me more about the Regional Transportation Authority and how that was developed, and in comparison how that process will work.
The Regional Transportation Authority was the first success this region had had in 25 years on transportation. We've analyzed why it worked. What we believe made it successful was there was first an effort to raise the awareness across the region of the problems that we had with transportation. Then there was public input, an informed public giving their ideas about what they wanted for the region in terms of transportation. We called to the table various groups, environmentalists, transit supporters, roadway and freeway supporters. Everybody's voice was welcome. We found middle ground, and I think we created a product that this community embraced. It passed 60-40, and that was a huge accomplishment for the region.
And who will participate in this town hall, and how are the participants chosen?
There'll be 150 people selected. For this to work, we recognize that you have to have your known community leaders participate, but you also need the voices of our youth, the voices of diversity from across the region, divorces of different genders. We have to make sure that we hear every voice. So the Arizona Town Hall is assisting us in selecting the people who will participate. Approximately half will be invited. They would be the people that are known community, business, and government leaders. The other half will be selected through this application process that the Town Hall is assisting us with to allow us to select this diverse group, so that we can put everybody together over those 4 days and really come out with an opinion that matters for Tucson.
And another aspect of this, as I understand, the community voices to help make it more, even more inclusive.
Clearly, we can't hear everyone's voice if we're limited to 150 people. So we have another opportunity on the website where you can sign up to be a community voice. If you sign up and provide your email and your name and some basic information, you'll participate in a series of short surveys. That information will be fed into the town hall and fed into the work that will go on after the town hall is completed so that we get a broader base of information and facts to act upon.
And Ron, how successful has the application process been so far? It's not even been a week since the news conference. Are you getting a lot of feedback from the area?
The response has been extremely strong. We're very gratified at the level of interest. And I think it reflects where this community is. We're at 1 million people. I think people want to take on the tough issues. And we need to find solutions for our community so that we can leave this community to our children in the same shape that we enjoy today and maybe even better.
And what are some of those tough issues that we're going to be taking on?
We're going to talk first in the town hall about what we want for the future of Tucson. What do we value? What do we want to preserve? What is it about this place that we don't want to lose as we change and grow over the years? Then we're going to get into some topics that are of great importance, like water. Water is the lifeblood of the desert, and we have to make sure we have a clean supply for the future. Transportation, land use planning, how will we build in the future? Then we need to talk about people, because people are what makes up a community. We need to talk about workforce, healthcare. We also need to then talk about that all-important topic of education. Combined with literacy, education and literacy are foundational to our future. So this town hall will concentrate a great amount of time on that.
And then walk me through the process after the town hall. What happens then?
The town hall is a wonderful process in that a report comes out within 2 weeks. What we have committed to as a group of organizations from across this community is to take action on this report. We intend to continue to engage the community, develop a vision for the region. We intend to take action in areas like education and water. It's our hope that the town hall is the start of a process where we really can realize the possibilities for the future of the Tucson region.
And will you be setting deadlines in the different areas, the topic areas, for action to be taken after the town hall?
After the town hall, we will evaluate the responses, evaluate the level of interest, which at this point is very high, and we will begin to develop a process with partner organizations across the region and with government officials to take on these difficult subjects. And hopefully, we can be talking a year or two from now about all of the things that we've accomplished since the regional town hall concluded.
After the town hall is concluded and you start this process to implement the ideas, how will you report to the community during that process, during that time?
Our plan is to come back to the community with a report on progress at least annually. So our plan is to give ourselves about a year. Let's work together as a community to work on some of these issues, and then we'll come back and report the progress that we've made.
Great. Thanks, Ron. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much.
KUAZ is a media sponsor of the Tucson Town Hall. To apply to participate in the town hall meeting scheduled for May, you can visit our website at kuaz.org. After the break, we'll hear about the recent controversy over classical music recordings thought to have been released by Joyce Hatto. And Robert Rappaport will introduce us to a national hero right here in Tucson. That's next on Arizona Spotlight. The normally sedate world of classical music was upset recently by a scandal. It was discovered that hundreds of recordings thought to have been performances by an English pianist, the late Joyce Haddo, were faked. Steve Hahn talks now with recently retired UA School of Music professor Nicholas Zumbro, who has a personal connection to this still unfolding story.
Does that put into question the work of anyone that appears on that label now? And have you had to field any of these inquiries?
Only from you. Fortunately, I have all the original tapes and the outtakes that were done for all my records. So if anyone tried that on me, I guess I'd have a nice libel suit, wouldn't I?
Nicholas Zumbro is an internationally known concert pianist who has specialized in the bravura repertoire of such composers as Franz Liszt, Charles Ives, and Enrique Granados, and such contemporaries as Michael Tippett and George Sontakis. The Juilliard-trained musician has blended an academic career with numerous concert performances in Vienna, London, St. Petersburg, and Paris, but has only rarely recorded. It was with the intention of setting down some of his concert specialties that he made contact with William Barrington Coop of the English Concert Artist label in the early 1990s.
I was introduced to Mr. Barrington Coop, Barry as he was known, and I was introduced to him by an American artist who knew that I was interested in making some records at that time. He was very interested in making a recording of my Ives Sonata. I had done the premieres of the Ives in a number of European cities and had wonderful reviews, but I hadn't actually made a commercial recording of it. I'd recorded it in Italy and various places. But anyway, that's how I met him.
Barrington Coop had been involved in the recording industry since 1960 and had developed a bit of a reputation with his small independent labels.
The reason that I was interested in him is I was told that he was absolutely marvelous at getting a good sound and recording, and that he was a musician himself, and that whatever editing had to be done, he was very good at it. Frankly, I was very interested in recording the Goyescas, but he was very interested in recording the Eye. So I guess you can figure out which one we started with.
The recordings of Granados' complete Goyescas and the Ives Concord Sonata and the Samuel Barber Sonata were released by 1993, but Zumbro was not entirely happy with the experience.
One of the reasons I did it with him, aside from the fact that I was assured that he had very high musical standards, was that he promised to distribute this worldwide. And I was particularly interested in getting it distributed in the United States, of course. And that became a bone of contention later on.
It was during this time that Zumbro met Barrington Coop's wife, Joyce Haddo, a minor figure in English musical life who had abandoned her concert career in 1976 because of a recurring ovarian cancer. Though she made no mention of it to him at the time, this was also the period when she was supposed to have been making voluminous recordings for her husband's label, which only began to be issued in the year 2002.
Yes, I met her on a couple of occasions in Cambridge, and I thought she was very nice and charming and intelligent, a very good conversationalist. But, of course, I felt terribly sorry for her because he kept telling me that she was going to die in 6 months. From the very beginning, he told me that she was very ill and that she was going to die. And some other people told me that he was very ill and that he was going to die soon, and that if I wanted to do any records with him, I'd better get busy.
Zumbro never heard her perform, but he was given some recordings.
She gave me a few cassettes, and I think this was about the time he was beginning to put everything on CD. I was awestruck with the list of her discs. I really couldn't believe it. But, I mean, I thought, well, she's just much, much smarter than I am, that's all.
Many critics were also startled by the sudden virtuosity of the reclusive Haddo, whose recordings began to be reviewed by English critics in 2003. Though her older recordings had long been out of print, and earlier appraisals of her artistry had been neutral to negative, no one questioned her sudden resurgence, nor the incredible volume of recording activity she had supposedly engaged in. During one five-day period, she was said to have recorded Chopin's Four Ballades, Beethoven's Hammerklavier Sonata, and most of Prokofiev's 10 sonatas. Is such a feat even feasible?
Well, if I say no, it implies perhaps that I know that I couldn't do that. So I guess it's possible, if you know the pieces really well. I mean, when you advertise yourself as doing things that most people would consider impossible, I guess you're asking for it.
By some counts, at least 119 CDs were issued in the space of just 3 years, covering the broadest range of solo and concerto piano repertoire imaginable. Among the works, the complete sonatas of Beethoven, Mozart, and Prokofiev, a great swath of music by Chopin and Liszt, complete concertos by Rachmaninoff, Tchaikovsky, Brahms, and Mendelssohn, as well as profoundly difficult cycles by Godofsky and Messiaen. Is it possible to record in barely 10 years a volume of music that not even Rubinstein could accomplish in a career?
I don't think so. I think you'd have to be awfully naive to believe that. But apparently, there were a lot of English critics who believed it. I think they rather overdid it.
The massive scale of the deception came to light barely 3 weeks ago when an innocent purchaser of Joyce Haddow's performance of Liszt's Transcendental Etudes placed the disc in his computer drive, only to see his iTunes reader bring up the name of another artist, the Hungarian Laszlo Simon. His curiosity caused the editors of Gramophone magazine, one of the biggest promoters of her ascendant career, to establish that not only was the Liszt performance purloined, but likely all of them were. Classical music bloggers have been feverishly tracking down the source recordings ever since. Should critics have uncovered the fraud earlier? Was Boston Globe critic Richard Dyer too credulous in August of 2005 when he hailed Haddow as the greatest living pianist that almost no one has ever heard of?
Too credulous by half. In fact, I think if I were one of those critics and I heard some of these performances, which would sound exactly like well-known performances, any critic, seems to me, would have to recognize that if he listened to it at all. I know if I heard a recording by Rubinstein accredited to whomever, I recognize it, recognize the sound, the style, the rubatos, everything.
The only question that remains is, why did they do it?
It seems obvious that he wanted to make his wife happy. She was dying, and when he started, she was supposed to die in just a few months, so he would have only had to do 2 or 3 or 4. But she kept on living, desperately ill but alive. I think it's very fortunate for her that she died before this broke, because she went out in great style, and people were regarding her as one of the great pianists, and I guess that's her last impression. But I don't know what will become of him now. I can't think of what he'll do.
Legal action will likely be taken against Barrington Koop by the many record labels he stole from. The official British phonographic industry has already begun a complete investigation. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Steve Hahn.
This is Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. A Tucson woman has recently received a national award for giving her time and compassion to help mentor a girl through some turbulent times. As Robert Rappaport tells us, University of Arizona Director of Campus Recreation Juliet Moore was a recipient of the Heroes in Our Midst Award, which is sponsored by the American Greeting Card Association.
The association, which honors one hero a month nationwide, says the goal is to recognize volunteer work by sending greeting cards to the award winners. Moore received a special medallion greeting card and a check for $1,000 that will be donated in her name to the Big Brothers Big Sisters agency where she volunteers. Moore says she's honored.
This is just an incredible opportunity. It's one of those moments in your life that become sacred that you'll remember for until you die. It's one of those that you'll reflect back, just like the cards. You reflect back on this kind of presentation and this kind of memory, and so it's a real special memory that will live through me and makes me just overwhelmed. I just feel overwhelmed.
Moore is the big sister to Monique Ramirez, a once-shy girl who had some family turmoil when she first met Moore 2.5 years ago. Now 16, Monique recalls meeting Moore for the first time.
And at first I was nervous, like I always am. And I couldn't speak more than 2 words to her. She'd be like, you want to do this? Okay. That's all I said. And I don't know, after a while, I just it clicked. I mean, she had so much in common with me. We love animals, love music.
Monique says her big sister came along at a very difficult time in her life.
All I had for the past year since November 27th, all I had was my tata. And I didn't have my mom at the time, and I didn't have my dad. I mean, I love them, but they weren't, you know, prepared to handle me. I'm a teenager, come on. I'm going to say a couple crazy things, but it doesn't mean to, you know, let me go. But I moved in with my tata, and Juliet saw how it affected me really bad. And I was very sad for a while, and I went through a rough time. And she was still there supporting me, telling me that she loved me, telling me that everything's going to be okay, that my parents do love me, they just don't understand me. Because I'm very different, very different. And she was just there.
Not only did the two meet when Monique was having problems, Moore was experiencing problems of her own.
I had a kidney transplant. I have a new start at life, so I celebrate life every day. That's my motto, and she knows it too, celebrate life.
Juliet Moore encourages everyone to volunteer.
In fact, I had some students on my staff that were, when they found out about it, they said, oh, well, do they need additional? I said, oh, yeah, you had it signed up. So I actually talked to some of my student staff, and they said, well, I don't have time. I said, believe me. I have the time. You have the time.
As for her little sister, Monique Ramirez says Moore deserves the recognition.
I am proud of her, and I think she deserved it. She deserves way more. She deserves everything.
More information on Moore's award is available online at heroesinourmidst.org. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Robert Rappaport.
And now we've got just enough time for a story from our friend Baxter Black.
I danced with another woman tonight. My wife didn't seem to mind. We took to the floor like a pair of swans that fate forever entwined, leaving our wake through the dancers who flowed like notes in search of a song. We tested our two-step, tried out a waltz, then laughed when something went wrong. I led and she followed, trusting each step, spurred by the beat of the band, like birds taking wing the very first time. It helped to hold someone's hand. And although I had known this woman before, I'd thought of her as a child. There on the dance floor, arm round her waist, I found my heart was beguiled. For her, a window had opened, and I was there. I'm eternally glad. The rest of my life I'll remember. First night she danced with her dad.
That is Arizona Spotlight for this week. As always, thank you for listening. Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio from the University of Arizona and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. A portion of the music heard on today's program was written and performed by Calexico. Audio archives of Arizona Spotlight are available online at kuaz.org. Podcasts are also available. I'm Mark McLemore.